And he said, bye bye, mummy, to her. And there was this moment of, oh my God, my child just called this woman mummy. I'm not mummy in his life.
Fabulous to meet you. Do, 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 do.
So hello, Robbie. It's so fabulous to meet you. I have no idea who you are, other than that you're the fairy gin mother. And that's yes. What got my attention. I thought, I've got to have her on my podcast. So welcome.
Since I was a child, I've been fascinated in flying. And one of my grandmothers always told me that she had fairies at the end of her garden. And it was just, I kind of had this very magical childhood, really. So now in my 50s, I've sort of almost come, well, I have pretty much come full circle and really released my inner child. And I just the whole fairy thing, the gin thing, the mother thing, it just describes who I am. So there's quite a lot that led to me coming up with this name. So in true love of music and magic and time travel and all sorts of things that I'm really into, I want to start with a quote, and I did write it down just to remind myself. And this is a blues riff in B. Watch me for the changes and try to keep up, which is what Marty McFly says in Back to the Future.
I love it. Oh my gosh, so much to unpack even in the first sentence. So can you start with your lovely name, Robbie? Is that short for something?
Yes.
Where did that come from?
Yeah, I was given the name Roberta Jane by my mother. And I'm not sure where that really came from, but I had mum had a baby names book. So when I was growing up, and I can go into a little bit detail about mum having babies and things, because there's a whole other story about that. But this baby names book was probably the very first book that I ever was fascinated in terms of finding out knowledge and things. And she told me lots and lots of stories, but the baby names book had the name Roberta in it, and it means bright, shining with fame. So I grew up believing that that was what I had to be, because that's what it said. And the same as believing that I was an Aries meant that I was a leader and headstrong. I was like, oh, okay, I have to do those things then. I didn't know any different. So it's interesting what is kind of piled on us as a young child, whether it's positive, negative, or however you want to perceive that, really.
I love that so much, because it plays immediately into one of the things that basically is the foundation of Fabulosity, which is my movement, and that is about self-identity. If you think you are worth nothing, guess what? You will be worth nothing. If you identify as a fat, lazy, horrible person, whatever judgments you have about yourself, that's what you indeed will show up as. But it's so easy to change, and you can decide, I want to take on this identity, and therefore I will start being that person. And then indeed you become it. So you became
Bright and shining with fame.
Bright and shining with fame. I mean, what a clever mom, creating a star before you were even how old.
Yeah. I went to a business conference in Washington, D.C. I think it was about 2008, 2009, something like that. And I went to a workshop as part of this big conference. And there was somebody saying a lot of what you've just said, actually, in terms of redefining yourself and reinventing yourself and just belief in that. And they got us to make an acronym out of the initials of our first name. And for me, I remember it now. And I mean, it's what, 12, 13 years ago. And I decided that it meant reach out, believe, enthuse, and really take action. And that's who I then personified as Roberta. Interesting that I now call myself Robbie. There's another whole story to that.
Where were you born and where are you living? What happened before the fairy gin mother?
Yeah, so I've got me as a little girl born in Oxfordshire in England. And I was born in the mid 60s. My parents were 19 and 20, very much into the whole sort of 60s thing. And they were the first within their friendship groups to obviously get married and have a baby. So they still had this need for involvement with all of their friends and had an exciting life. They both loved music. They both loved acting. They were in a local amateur dramatics group. And It's interesting, I suppose. I grew up with the fact that I then spent a lot of time with both of my grandmothers, my mum's mum and my dad's mum, because mum and dad had stuff to do. And they both worked. So I spent a lot of time around each of these grandmothers, who both taught me very different values, really. That was in Oxfordshire. One nan lived in Didcot, and we actually lived with her until I was about four, I think, just sort of like in a little back room, because obviously mum and dad didn't have a great deal of money or, you know, opportunity to do much and give me much. So in the course of those first few years of my life, my mum fell pregnant several times and lost babies repeatedly, which was, I can't remember those times now. But I do believe, I've revisited some of these feelings recently, and I won't go into how, but I think I was very, it made me a very empathetic person, because I was really connected to mummy sad and my nan sort of trying to, just sort of manage the whole situation. And it was a very stiff upper lip British, that baby didn't happen, let's get on with it kind of approach. But I'm sure as a child, I remember, in fact, my mum, it was only during COVID, I'm jumping around again already. It was during COVID that I spent some time with my mum, just sat in her conservatory chatting when we were allowed to sort of go and visit. And I used to go and see her, and I still do go and see her every week. And she started opening up to some of these times from years ago that she'd never spoken about. And having a stillbirth, she spoke about the bedroom in which I was sleeping. There was like a cot and everything ready for this baby that obviously didn't happen. My nan coming around and just packing everything away in a suitcase, and then us being sent off to go and spend some time at the seaside and get over it. And I don't know if it was exactly the same time, but I can remember walking along a beach with my mum and my dad, feeling that I was the person that needed to make everybody else happy. And I was probably three, so this is sort of pre-proper formation of memories. But I remember joy of being, do you remember that feeling? I'm sure most people will relate to this, being the child in the middle, and you're holding mummy's hand and you're holding daddy's hand, and you're being swung as you're going along this path along the seaside, and it's sort of one, two, three, whoosh, and you fly through the air. And this is kind of where the flying, I think, started from. And being on a swing, I felt that sense of freedom and just wanting to be the person in the middle, to me, meant some kind of joy, and I can't even put it into words, but then it sort of became the narrative of my entire life, trying to find joy for other people that felt like that they didn't have it.
So did you feel the responsibility sense? Did you feel the responsibility on your shoulders? Is that what you meant? You just took on that job?
Possibly, but I think also it must have been this is pre my ability to remember, but I must have had language at that time. And I'm sure I was a very, very curious child. So I'm sure I would have known there was a baby coming. There would have been this excitement and this anticipation, and then followed by disappointment and feeling like, we're not having a baby, or I'm not having a baby, or I'm not going to have a baby sister. And of course, it wasn't until later on mum told me that there were two sisters that I lost. And I've always felt this desire and need to be with other women, and I wished I had a sister. I've got a brother now, and he was born when I was four, and it's we went on and had a very nice family life, to be honest with you. But just that need for some kind of feminine energy, I think I felt early in life. Does that make sense?
Yes. Fabulous. Thank you. That's amazing insights into,
I used to dress my brother up as a girl all the time, put makeup on him and put wigs on him, and he used to love it. So he used to just pretend to be a girl, because I guess that was what I felt I wanted him to be.
I think that's really good for boys. We brought our boys up as well, very much with the feminine energy and the masculine energy. They love dressing up in whatever they wanted, dresses sometimes, pants other times. Pants, that's an American term for trousers, not underwear specifically. But I think it's important for boys, so that's awesome.
Yeah, so this I think with mum and dad being so into the Barn Theatre and me spending so much time with my grandmothers, one nan lived in, everybody lived in council houses. You know, we didn't exactly come from great means or anything. What was called my little nan, she lived next door to my big nan, and that was my mum's mum, thatched houses that were built just after the war, adjoining. And they had a huge, huge big garden in the countryside. And they, so my brother and I used to just ride bikes round and round these two houses. And the beautiful garden that she had, just everything, it was every single fruit tree you could possibly imagine. And so we would always pick apples, we'd go blackberry picking. She had a rhubarb patch, cherries, pears, you name it. It was just greengages and plums. And so there was always this abundance and this feeling that being in nature was a really important part of existence, really, for me. And it gave me great joy as a child. And it's something that, again, as an adult, I've always returned to. I've brought up my own children to love nature, and that's an important aspect. And my nan herself was an incredibly resilient woman. She made wines out of all of these fruits. She always had demijohns in a cupboard underneath her stairs, and every fireworks night, which was the 5th of November in the UK, if you're not familiar with that, we would always have a massive great big bonfire party, and she would make this famous hooch. Everybody would always come round for her hooch, and it was this hot alcoholic liquid that all of the adults would be drinking. And as a child, I was the oldest of all of the cousins, so my mum was the eldest of all of her generation, and then of course I was the firstborn of that generation, so I then taught all of these second cousins to how to make a guy, and I was always in charge of the little ones, and while all the adults were having this amazing revelry with this hooch and so forth after the fireworks. So that was that nan. And then with my dad's mum, she was a barmaid, war widow, and she struggled. She had a lodger, and he became known as my Uncle Dick. He wasn't my uncle, but he lived and he stayed with the family from when I was very small right the way through. So he was like a grandfather, I suppose. And he was great with his hands. He worked at Didcot Power Station, and he built a bar in the corner of the room. And I can remember very vividly going behind the bar and just seeing all of these bottles and glassware. And it was just like magic. And I wanted to be able to be tall enough to see over the top of the bar so that I could serve people. So I was always dragging a chair around behind the bar so that I could stand up and pretend to be a grown up. So it was really important to me that I wanted to be the big grown up and to be serving all of these wonderful liquids to people. So it was no surprise, as soon as I turned 18, I decided to be a barmaid. It's not the term now, it's a bartender, isn't it? But I wanted to be a barmaid like my nan. She was a really creative lady, very artistic. I'm left-handed, and this nan was left-handed as well. So she was the one who taught me to knit and to crochet and to write. And we did a lot of colouring together. She did art, and we used to mix a lot of colours together. And I can remember very vividly having powder paints and putting things together with water and doing things in jam jars. And just the magic of getting red and blue and just putting them together. It's like purple. That didn't exist. It wasn't there. And now I've made it. It's magic. You know, and then the ability to then be able to sort of, you know, mix those primaries, and just like that came from nowhere. And I really believed it was magic. And she had to say fairies at the bottom of her garden, or she told me she did, and I really believed her. And every time I went there, I was like, come on, let's see the fairies. And she was like, oh, if they know you're there, they'll be invisible, they're watching you, but you can't see them, but they know you're there. And I believed that they lived in the flowers. She had all these fuchsia bushes. Garden was just beautiful, with all much smaller garden than my other nan, but she had a lot of fuchsia bushes, and the flowers on a fuchsia, you know, are like a little ballerina with their little tulle skirts and the little legs, and I I just completely believed that if they were invisible, they were hiding in the flowers, and that I could always see them, the fairies were there and that they were flowers. So I had this kind of very mixed up magical sadness tinged with happiness, tinged with need to make everybody feel better. And I did grow up the sort of the center of attention, because I was the youngest of the, well, I was the first child of my generation. But with, as I say, this longing for a sister, you know, my brother came along and it was great. And then I think by the time I got, God, I'm only talked about the first few years here, but when I got to school, I think it was just, that explains to me my draw to want to be friends with people and want to be a people pleaser and want to make other people feel better. So if there was anybody in the playground that was looking a bit sad or lonely, I would just make a beeline for them, and that I would be the person that played with them, and I would be their best friend if they didn't have a friend in the world, sort of thing. And this is where then time travel came into it, because I was a big Doctor Who fan, as I think most kids of my age in England were at that time. My doctor is Tom Baker. And I did get the chance to meet him in 1975. And he was doing some filming in East Hagbourne, the village where one of my nans lived. And that was just so exciting. Him and Elizabeth Sladen. And she was a real figure for female empowerment when I think back on it now, Elizabeth Sladen. She then had this spin-off series years later called The Sarah Jane Adventures. And it just went to show that women can time travel too. And so time has been fascinating for me. I've always looked back in time, I've always looked forward in time, but really it's the now, it's whatever's going on in the now. And yeah, so they had a playground in the in the school playground that was painted out for a netball court, painted on the tarmac. And we used to travel along this line, me and this little girl called Judith, who didn't have any friends. And I said, right, we're going to go along here and it's all going to be dinosaurs. And then we're going to go along here and it's all going to be spacemen. And she just came on this journey with me. And I just remember thinking, I'm making all of this up and she believes me. But it was about later in life when I learned about creative visualization. It's like, I've been doing this forever. Oh, my goodness. You really can create your own reality. You know, even if it's from, well, I mean, what even is reality? I mean, we know now from films like The Matrix and so forth, Bohemian Rhapsody, is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? So much music comes into my head whenever I think of anything. It's always about lyrics from songs. And I just absorbed everything, whether it was music or art or nature.
I love everything you're saying. And what really jumps out for me is the importance of grannies and important role that they can play on a child's life, and how we're kind of starting to see that kind of chapter for ourselves, aren't we, when we're in midlife. And I just think we really need to be conscious of taking on that role in a very conscious way, because I had grannies, but they weren't particularly interested in me. And I really feel like there's a real void in my life because I didn't have that connection. And what a special connection, and how they've changed your life and really created you, haven't they? I love you've had that experience. I think it's marvelous.
Yeah, it got me really interested in maternalism, because then jumping forward, as a mother myself, I was, I suppose, not at the forefront. That would make it, you know, make me sound like some kind of a pioneer, and I'm not, but I was at the forefront at the time in the 90s, pre-internet, to think, I need to find a way that I can be, that I can have a really fulfilling career and be an amazing mum. And there was no negotiation as far as I was concerned. Growing up at school, I didn't love maths, but the best part of maths, I love circles. And growing up, my best thing in maths was Venn diagrams, and the fact that you can have a circle here and you can have a circle here, but it's always the intersection. It was that bit there that fascinated me, is how there's something in the middle. And again, this goes back to me as a child, I suppose, between mummy and daddy holding their hands. So there was always that intersection that fascinated me. Why am I saying this? Again, it was the mixing of the colours, the red and the blue and so forth. But as a mother, I wanted to work. It was really important to me that I had a career. And I was working in the travel industry, and that's what I studied. I studied business studies with travel and tourism in London. Yeah, that was a whole other story. I moved to London at 19 and decided to, you know, do learning and be a bartender in London just because you can, really. So, but then as a mum, I was like, well, how do you do everything? And I tried the traditional carrying on, going to work, coming home, going work to work, coming home, dropping the child off at a childminder, coming back at the end of the day, picking him up, taking him home, getting ready for bed, putting him to bed, getting up the following morning, going to work, coming home, and thinking, is this the real life? Is it fantasy that I can combine the two? I didn't find a solution until I was pregnant with my second. And Jack, my eldest, was not quite two, actually. And he was at the childminders. I was working late, didn't have mobile phones then. So I had no means of contacting my childminder and telling her that I was going to be late. So, of course, she was fantastic. She looked after all four of my children, actually. But she just hung on to Jack until I got there. And I was running really late, and I can remember the hormones were raging. I'm about 7 or 8 months pregnant at this stage. I'm really thinking, what is life all about? Why am I doing all of this? And I've got to get home and get Jack, get him to bed and so forth. Anyway, I got to the childminders and she saw my car pull up. She got him ready in his little coat and his shoes and everything, standing in the hallway, ready to say goodbye to her and come with me. And as I got there, I was like, sorry, I'm late. And she just said to Jack, I said to her, say bye-bye to Penny. And he said, bye-bye, mummy, to her. And there was this moment of, oh my God, my child just called this woman mummy. I'm not mummy in his life. And I got in the car, I strapped him in, I cried all the way home. I thought, what am I doing this for? What is my life all about? And I am full of hormones, I'm hugely pregnant and I'm tired. But it was a pivotal moment for my life, because I think, you know, it was a simple mistake on his part. Her name was Penny, my name was Mummy. It was, you know, they sound a bit the same. But she said to me prior to this, you know, when I look after children, sometimes they call me mummy. That's OK. We're not going to tell you if they take their first steps with us as childminders. We won't tell you. You'll still see and have all of those amazing moments, even if it's on the evenings or at the weekend or whatever. Or they say first words that, you know, you don't get to hear. She was so sympathetic to everything in that regard. She was a wonderful woman, which is why she ended up looking after all four of mine. But at different times, but I needed to remodel being a working mother to a way that felt good, because it was joyless and I am all about joy, and I wasn't feeling any joy at that time. And after the crying and putting the baby to bed, the realization that I need to do life differently really hit me at that point. But I loved my career and I loved being a mum, and I needed to find a way that I could do both.
What was your career?
I was working in the travel industry as a trainer. So I was running training courses for a company called Travel Bag, who do international travel all over the world. I was going to have to let go of the travel career that I had been building up. So that was like a sadness in a way, but I needed to turn it around. And a bit like losing the babies, I suppose, and I didn't think of it like that in those terms, but a bit like going back to the story that I've mentioned about as a child, it's like from some sadness, something happy has to come. It was just a natural progression. And I don't think I consciously thought this, it just seemed to be the right thing to do. And it's so simple, so damn simple, Yolanda. It was like, well, what am I good at and what do I love? And what I love was children. and I wanted to be with my own child and baby that was on the way. And I loved music, and I was a musician. Well, I still am a musician. And I figured if I could create a business that was to do with music and children and bringing joy into people's lives, that had to be a good thing, didn't it? And I could do it on my terms. I would do it in school term times only, so that when my children got older, I would have all of the school holidays off and I wouldn't work weekends, and I would just work exactly how I wanted it to work. At the time, and again, it's funny how all of these threads kind of come together. At the time, as I was just approaching my maternity leave, I was trying to get Jack onto a waiting list for a local music group. And they, I phoned up because you obviously didn't have the internet. So I phoned up and said, oh, you know, I'd like to put Jack down for this class. I've seen it advertised in the little prospectus book. And they said, oh, no, sorry, there's no space. We can put you on the waiting list, but there's a waiting list of about 40 people. I was like, 40 people? How big is the group? And they said, 15. I'm like, so that's, I'm not going to get. So this happened about the week before. And then so after putting Jack to bed on the terrible day that, you know, he called somebody else mummy, I suddenly thought, well, I'm going to start a music group, because then I can take Jack to it. I can take the baby when he's born. And who are all of these other 39 people on the list? They must all want a music group as well. And it was as simple as that. So I set out a business plan. I went to Barclays Bank and I asked for a loan of £1,000 so that I could buy some instruments and the equipment. Then I started ringing around all of the local community centres and saying, right, I want to book a week on a, at this place and that place and that place. So I'd looked up, decided to look after the whole of the local area with music classes for the under five that parents come along to as well. So everybody can learn traditional nursery rhymes, which a lot of, you know, mothers, well, not just mothers, parents in general were kind of losing that ability to remember the old traditional rhymes and so forth. And, you know, there were so many more exciting songs, and you could do fancy things like, you know, monkeys bouncing on the bed, and I could imagine a monkey theme, and a bit like Sesame Street, you know, it was like, this week we're talking about the number two and bears, or, you know, we're talking about frogs and the number five, or, you know, so the, I just made it all up and it felt like fun, and it didn't feel like a business, but it was a very successful business. It ran for 25 years. It won a lot of local awards and international awards for a business for children. I think there was in the region of, I'm not sure now, we lost track around about the 40,000 mark, but 42,000 children that actually went through our books over the course of those 25 years that came to music workshops. I employed a lot of ladies. I launched it as a franchise, and we just spread joy.
And do you understand how amazing that is, that it just sort of developed from your creativity and your desire to change your life, and you just reinvented and made it happen in 25 years? That's incredible.
Yeah. Last month, a very good friend of mine, she applied for a job as a workshop leader with Maraca Jacks, and I interviewed her. She was fantastic. She had two little children. We just hit it off straight away. We were great friends. And I said, you know, definitely you're going to work for me, but I think, you know, we can develop this whole thing together. And her little boy came round to our house, and we had one of those little mini keyboards, and he used to love playing on this keyboard, and it was really difficult to drag him away when it was time to go home. He always wanted to be playing with our keyboard, so quite often I would sort of lend it to her and say, well, you know, take it if you want, you know, he's more interested in it than my Edward was. Anyway, long story, he did then carry on and have music lessons. They had a piano, and he plays keyboard in a band now. Last month, I think it was last month, he went to a Coldplay concert at Wembley. He got right down the very front. He held up a sign saying, you know, can I play with you? Chris Martin chose him from the crowd and said, yeah, come on up. Can you really play? And he said, yes. And it's kind of gone viral on the internet now. Just this guy that he picked out of the audience that played keyboard, and they just did this beautiful version of, I can't remember the name of the song now, Fly Away, I think it's called, which, yeah, that's interesting. And he played this song, and it's just, and he was just like a little boy, and it's just, you know, from this, you know, from tiny acorns what that's now become.
That's so amazing.
I can't claim any credit for it. You know, it's all on him and his mum and the fact that they obviously carried on this love of music. But the just to have had the balls to just hold up a sign and say, yes, you know, I'll play with you. And he did. So he's now, you know, I mean, what an accolade at the age of 27, 28, to be able to say that he's played live with Coldplay at Wembley Stadium.
Amazing. I love that story. Thank you for sharing it. That's incredible.
What happened next was I was pregnant with twins. This was when Jack was 4 and Edward was 2. Went into labour with the twins, and I had my daughter naturally. And then something terrible happened. I had a placental abruption. And for a few minutes, they lost both me and the second baby. So all hands on deck. I was so lucky that I was with the NHS, saved my life, and they brought I had a cesarean section, which I knew nothing about, to get my second son out. He's fine. The upshot of that is I had two babies in one, because I always said I would like to have 2 children or 4 children. I never wanted 3 children. And it's interesting what you put out to the universe and kind of want to manifest, because I only really had 3 children for 28 minutes.
That's amazing.
And yeah, interesting story. My daughter was born one side of midnight and my son was born the other side of midnight. So they've got different birthdays, which I think is quite unusual.
That's fabulous, isn't it? Awesome.
Yeah, it is fabulous.
It is fabulous to meet you.
And to then go from 2 children to 4 children and going then on thinking, well, how do I run a business now? And I was listening to one of your other interviews that you did with another lady who was talking about society, you know, a culture where they have 4 women raising, you know, 4 wives of a man raising multiple children. God, did I relate to that? Because, you know, and I know you're a mum of 4 as well, aren't you?
That's right.
Yeah. So we were damn hard trying to do it all on our own, don't we? It does take a village to raise a child.
Well, I was really lucky in that my kids were born in South Africa and we were blessed by having the best nanny in the world. Her name was Bertha and she was very much part of our family. She helped me to raise my children and thank heavens for her, because without her, I don't know how I would have done it. She was marvelous. We're still friends to this day. She's still alive. She's amazing. I love her dearly. Our children love her dearly. And so, yeah, doing it on your own. Very difficult, very, very difficult. And to go from 2 to 4, that's a nightmare of a jump.
Well, it is what it is. You just get on with it, don't you? But I think at that point, it was a real, I think there was clearly trauma, and I don't think we understood the trauma at the time. In fact, for my first husband, of what that really did to him mentally. He never wanted to kind of talk about it or deal with it. But, you know, he was literally left holding the baby when my daughter was born, and all of these medical staff were dealing with myself and Richard. They just handed Kimberly straight to him and he went off out into the corridor, and he was left literally holding this newborn baby out in the corridor while they dealt with everything else, which I'm sure there was trauma there. Anyway, long story short, that marriage didn't survive. I went through a feeling of feeling quite sorry for myself, but I didn't have very much time to do that because I was a mum of 4 kids under the age of 6. So we just dealt with what we needed to deal with, and, you know, divorce and everything. I don't wish it on anybody, but certainly have to deal with that when you've got very young children and you're on your own. It's very tough. And again, the support of my family and friends really got me through that very difficult time. But I knew I couldn't keep running the business. And that was a massive decision to let go, because it was like my baby. So I sold the whole business to one of my pilot franchisee, and she took it over. And I stayed around as a business mentor behind the scenes for a while and just did consulting. I say just did consulting, but that then became my new business model, that I was consulting her to run the business. And this then forged a new way of doing things. And obviously the internet had come along by this stage, and it was like, I think I can help other women with their dream to combine motherhood and running a small business of their own from home. And in 2007, when I first arrived on Facebook, a lot of people were arriving on Facebook at around the same time. We all sort of scrappled around and we didn't really know what we were doing. But the first thing that I learned was that you could put words into a search term and try and find groups of people that you felt that you identified with. So I thought, oh, this is the way to do it. So I was looking for things like mums in business, business mums, small business owners. These were kind of the keywords, I suppose. And nothing was coming up. There were no groups. So I suppose it's a repeat of the same story with the children's music business. It's like, well, if there isn't one, maybe I should start one. So I started a business. It was called Giant Potential for Small Business Owners. And it was designed specifically at the beginning for mums who wanted to start their own business from home. So I set this thing up. I hadn't got a clue what I was doing. Again, making it all up, really. I think, to be honest with you, I should give myself more credit for the fact that I kind of had a business brain along by this time. But lots of people started arriving and it was just amazing. There was all of these women, mainly the UK, but then it started to spread. And I think we were in about 29 countries all around the world, of women wanting to find a new way of doing things that fit with their family. And it was about putting their family first, but really needing to earn an income and do it on their terms. Yeah. And under that umbrella, we all grew together. We had about 2,500-3,000 women in the end in the group. And it was just an amazing force for good to be able to know that ultimately we were all helping each other to grow our businesses. We were all doing a thing with a very feminine energy. It was collaborative. There wasn't men in suits telling us how to do things. We were doing it our way. And there are so many of those seed of an idea businesses from back in the day, all run by women now. And many of those businesses genuinely have fulfilled their giant potential. And I'm just proud of that as well, to be honest with you, because it's, and again, it's not something I did. It's something that we did as a collective. And that's the most important thing to me, is that, and again, they were my sisters. These were the people that I just felt like I should always have been connected with. And we found each other through this amazing thing called the internet that, you know, could be a force for good and not bad.
I love that so much. And so was it a business for you at the time? And what was your business model?
So it started off literally as a Facebook group. Then from there, that's where I then did business mentoring for people. It was a paid membership. There was a free membership and a paid membership. There were different levels. And then from there, you know, everybody was collaborating with each other and everybody was getting business. So everybody came to Giant Potential to find business and to market their own business. And every week we would put somebody in the spotlight and I did interviews a bit like this. There were just ways and means of making sure that, you know, as they say, a rising tide raises all ships. So we all grew together. And I think, you know, if there's any big problem in the world right now, it's about that there's too much division in the world, and people identifying with, well, that's not right for me, I'm this sort of person and I want to find like-minded people like me. And I think I was creating something which started off me thinking, well, I want to find people like me. They have to be female, they have to be a mother, they have to be like me, sitting at a computer at home, feeling the need for connection with other humans. And they have to, and actually it wasn't that, it needed to grow beyond that. There's a Nigerian woman who was making soap and trying to sell soap, and it was with local ingredients. It was like, right, everybody support her. And then there was this woman that needed support with a charitable cause that she wanted to do, so we all would help her. And it was just a beautiful thing, really. And I think, as I'm proud to call myself a humanist, and humanism really is about a growing number, I think, of non-religious people, well, people with a non-religious bias around the world who believe in a tolerant, empathetic society, and with rational thinking and kindness prevailing. And our motto at Giant Potential was "Give us prosper." So I was playing with the GP thing, "Give us prosper." And it wasn't about just turn up on here and just market your business and expect everybody to jump on board and support your business. It was about, well, what can you give back? And I think that's just such an important part of who I am as a person, but also who, and it really wasn't about me. It was about the entirety of the community. But again, that naturally, it peaked, it plateaued, it went into decline as other things came into being. And some people really mourned the loss of that. But to be honest with you, it was all about the connections and the human aspect that really kept the spirit of Giant Potential going, even when the website no longer existed.
I love that. And I love the sound of that diversity, where you've got women from all walks of life doing all sorts of different things. And I think that is so important. And, you know, I always harp on about this, that it's, yes, it's important to be with like-minded people and to find your tribe, absolutely. But you also need the diversity to meet people that you would never, ever have thought of speaking to. Or otherwise, how do you grow? I think that's so critical.
Yeah, I mean, I talked a lot about music. And as a child, I think it was in my teens when John Lennon died. And the song Imagine hit me like nothing I'd ever heard before when I heard it for the first time. And imagine all the people living life in peace. Mm. I still believe that is possible. And I think, you know, and especially throughout the pandemic, I heard that repeatedly, you know, kept seeing viral videos of people singing Imagine, including Sean Lennon, actually. And I think it was just, what do I want to say about that? I don't know. It's about being in the middle again. It's about, we can see a balanced view of the world by having a different perspective. And by being in the middle, you can see both sides. Joni Mitchell's a massive influence for me as well. And if you know her song, Both Sides Now, she wrote it as a young girl. I think she was about 19 or 20. And she's, you know, an old lady now. And she sang that recently with somebody called Brandi Carlile. If you don't know her, look it up. It was the most moving thing I've ever heard. For a song that she wrote with such wisdom at such a young age, to then be able to sing that again as an older woman and talk about, you know, I've looked at life from both sides now. I really don't know life at all.
Well, you're bringing me to tears, actually. That's quite remarkable.
Mm. And she talks about, in the first verse of the song, looking at the clouds. Mm-hmm. And this is something I did as a child in my nan's garden, looking up at the clouds. And I could see the rows and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air. And in that song, there's in that verse, there's a bit about I've looked at clouds from above and below, and you can, and this is where I then decided I wanted to be a flight attendant because I wanted to fly. So I actually, that was one of the next jobs that I did after being a bartender. I decided that I wanted to work for an airline. So I flew above the clouds for my job, and it was just the most remarkable, wonderful experience. I didn't do it for very long, but it really stayed with me. And in fact, my daughter now is, she's 25, and she is a flight attendant or cabin crew with British Airways. So she's kind of literally living the life that I wished I could have had, but I'm just so delighted for her that she travels all over the world and sends me these amazing photos of all the places that she's been, and tells us these great stories. So why am I mentioning this? Because what I do now as the fairy gin mother, which I kind of haven't got onto yet, but is about above the clouds thinking. And I don't know if that makes sense to anybody, but to me, it's about creative visualization. Everything kind of wrong or perceived as bad in the world happens below the cloud line. It's all to do with this division and humanity disagreeing with this, or fake news that, or there's always just stuff that I believe is below the cloud line. Mentally, if we raise ourselves above all of that and look down at it and realize, and in fact, going back to, Joni wrote an album called Blue, which is just amazing, but I want to mention Blue because Carl Sagan talked about the pale blue dot. The earth is so tiny in the great scheme of things, and we're known as the blue planet. And if you were to zoom in from outer space and come towards Earth, you would see firstly a pale blue dot, which would then get bigger, and then you would see that there's oceans, and then there's land, and then the closer you get in, and the closer you get in, you realize that there's people living on this thing, and surely they must all be of the same human race, mustn't they? Because they're all sharing this beautiful planet. But then the closer you get in, and the closer you get in, and then you see boundaries and borders and war and division and all of these awful things, and you realize that what's going on? What are we doing to our planet? Why do we think that the way to save the human race is to all disappear off to Mars and start a new colony? Why can't we look after the one that we've got? Why can't we look after the people that we've got? And as much as we need knowledge and understanding, I think getting above the clouds thinking to me is about stopping the old paradigm, which is getting in the know, to get in now, and to be present to whatever's going on around us, and whatever we can do where we are now, we can that ripple that out to others, which happens to also, getting in the now happens to also be the initials for the word gin. I am about gin and the wonderful stuff that you drink. This is, by the way, I'm just having it in my most fabulous glass, which is my Bombay Sapphire glass.
That is gorgeous.
The joy of gin is a fascinating intersection as a Venn diagram to me, because if you have joy, you can have joy without gin, and you can have gin without joy. But when you have the two together, that's where magic happens, in my mind, in a glass, when you mix all of the ingredients in. And I'm all about cocktails, and this is my water, and it's got lemon in, but it's... life is a cocktail, isn't it? And the five senses, I think, are what really I am really in my 50s now just tuning myself to, is the fact that there's so much more to this experience of life. And you know, I don't want to diss anybody else's religious beliefs if they have them, but if you're focused on the afterlife, there's a real good chance that you're missing out on everything that there is to offer in this life. And for example, I mean, I could have I could drink my water during the day just in a normal glass, but I've chosen today to do it in my Bombay Sapphire glass.
Why would you not have a fabulous glass to drink your water? Absolutely. That's part of fabification.
You know, I'm not particularly one for clothes and fashion and everything, but I have got Chanel number 19, which I like to wear. It reminds I first started wearing it when I was 19 and when I was flying, and I can spray it on now and I can feel 19. And back to the lemon, I've got my lemon that I just took my slide. I'm a bit fuzzy here, but if I put it in the middle... That to me represents everything delicious. I think it's about deliciousness. If we can just embrace a deliciously enriched experience of life, we're only here once. And I do want to live to my 90s or beyond if I can. I do want to die with a gin and tonic in my hand. That's kind of like the only criteria. If whatever's going on, if my family can just make sure that that happens, I'm good. And I just think that that to me is a version of my version of a fabulous life. It might not be to everybody's tastes, but the point is we've all got different tastes. And cocktails, again, which I teach people about cocktails, particularly gin-based cocktails, it's There's something for everyone. And even cocktails, it doesn't have to be about alcohol. You can have no and low alcohol cocktails. So even the somebody who's sober, even if you're pregnant, even if you're on medication and you can't drink alcohol, you can. Cocktails are really inclusive.
What you're saying is that cocktails is like the spice of life. It's like an expression of fabulosity that anyone can have it.
I couldn't have said it better.
Oh, I love that so much. Robbie, you just really quite fascinating. And I didn't expect this interview to go like this at all. I thought we would be speaking more about, you know, practicalities of gin, all that sort of thing. So it's been so remarkable. Time is marching on a little bit. I wondered if we could talk about your fabulous things.
So, as you probably already gathered, I think that life is an adventure. I think it's about feeling. It's feeling is a really important thing for me. So my first one will be music. So cheesy, but I'm just going to go there anyway. Music was my first love and it will be my last. So music is just the most magical thing. So I was in a band earlier this year. I'm currently teaching myself the Appalachian dulcimer, which is something that Joni Mitchell played, because I just love the sound of that. It's a beautiful instrument. So I wouldn't be without my dulcimer.
What is the what did you say the instrument was? A dulcimer?
A dulcimer, yes. It's a long, thin wood. I've got it here. Yeah, I have actually. Just a sec. Oh, I'm out of focus. But yeah, so it's a great big long
stringed instrument.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that sounds fascinating. How interesting. I'll have a look at that.
I can't play like Joni Mitchell, obviously, but I would like to. So that's something I'm working on.
Absolutely. Fantastic.
Secondly, I think would be, and it's not a thing, it's just doing spontaneous, crazy things. As we were coming towards the end of the lockdown, I had a conversation on Facebook with somebody who runs the entertainment side of things at a care home locally. And she was talking about, she was wanting things, they were going to do a Mary Poppins themed thing. And I was like, oh, come in and be Mary Poppins. So I bought the outfit. I practiced all the music. I even got myself a parrot headed umbrella. I went down to the old people's home, and well, you don't call it that now, do you? It's a care home. And we just sang all of these wonderful songs from Mary Poppins. And I got little tuppences and I made up little packages for each of them. With a little kite on, and just gave them, and as much as I could, I tried to find out what year they were born, so that the old tuppence was the year that they were born, and they all had like a little tuppence to be able to then just have as a memento of the occasion. Because something that, again, going back to music, actually, they say that music is the side door to the brain, for Alzheimer's and dementia. Music is, it speaks to people in a way and connects in a different way. And I want to explore that a little bit more. I've done it with one end of the spectrum with the younger children, but I would love to do more music with people with dementia. It's remarkably transforming. Again, connects us with our inner child. So my third would obviously be spreading joy. My fourth is wide open spaces. I live in Hampshire in the countryside, and we have deer and little rabbits. I look out my window and there's always little rabbits just running around outside, and I just love watching all of that. And I feel like I'm in a Bambi movie, actually, just living here. It's wonderful. I've got a golden retriever and I love taking her out for walks with my husband, and we go sort of all over. My fifth thing, I think, is, and if this isn't meant to be last, I'm saying this because it is last, and that's my four children. They're all now adults, and it was just as I was approaching my 50th birthday, I wanted to mark my birthday that in a way that just encompassed who I was as a person. And I was fortunate enough to be able to use the Bombay Sapphire Distillery, which is just up the road in Hampshire. So it was all gin themed. And if you know Bombay Sapphire, it's a beautiful blue coloured bottle. So I did a 50 shades of blue party. Everybody came, had to wear a shade of blue. And then, all of my four children are now adults. So the wonderful thing about that was that, and they're all gin lovers, you know, they're all Generation Z or Z, whatever we call it, or millennials, who love gin, and hardly any surprise really, because their mum loves gin. But it was just something so really special to be able to have time with all of the people that have mattered to me throughout my life, my family and my friends and everything, all together in one place, a bit like a wedding, but just for my birthday. And it was quite special, really. To celebrate all life and Jen. And so my children now, I've been a foster carer for 5 years. We fostered 16 children, I forgot to mention that. But the that came to an end just before COVID. It was a really difficult time for that to come to an end, because I was very attached to them. But it was the right time for a number of reasons. But this enabled me to get the gin out again, because we lived in a house where there was a cellar, and we had to keep all the alcohol hidden away as foster carers. It was really important. And again, I haven't mentioned this, but some of the children that I looked after came from, they were obviously in care for a reason, because they'd been removed from their birth families. But it was just important to me that they could see a joyous side to life from whatever dysfunctional, unhappy, traumatic backgrounds that they'd had. So it was important to hide the alcohol if children had come from a background of alcohol abuse. And when the fostering came to an end and I felt very sad for a while, I actually had my grandmother's, my little nan's old drinks cabinet that my brother had been looking after in his little cottage. He said, I'm getting rid of this. Do you want it? I'm like, yes, please. So I'm really all about bringing in the old and making it refreshed and new. So I painted up this gin cabinet in this beautiful sort of really rich bluey greeny color. I mixed the color myself, which again goes back to my other nan, and lit it up from behind, so there was all this beautiful lighting behind it. And then my gin collection went in there, and I've now added to my gin collection over the last 2 years, really 3 years. And we have this gin cabinet now, and it's just the most wonderful thing to be able to open the doors of the gin cabinet when all the adults come around and all their partners. So there's 8 kids in the house, although they're all in their 20s. And we have gin, and it's just the same as when they were little kids and we would have Christmas excitement in some way, or we'd all go on roller coasters, or we'd all do something together. This is now the thing that connects me with my family again. And I mentioned Brandy Carlisle. I'm going to finish on this one, because Brandy Carlisle actually she's an amazing connector. And she's done collaborations with Elton John recently and Joni Mitchell. But she set up something called High Women. I don't know if you're familiar with the group. That's all about the other half of the sky, the about raising awareness for women and women in music. And they did this wonderful song called Crowded Table. So I want to leave that with people, because to me, I want a house with a crowded table. And it gets me every time I think about it. There's so much with music that I think just moves us. So music family, Mary Poppins, Wide Open Spaces, joy. That sort of sums me up, really.
Oh my goodness. Robbie, you are absolutely fabulous. And I can't thank you enough for sharing a little bit about you. I'm sure there's so much more to unpack, and maybe we'll have a part two at some point. But
oh, that would be great. Yeah.
Honestly, you are so inspiring. It's your joy for life, joy for people, joy for experiences. It really lights me up. And I'm so impressed with myself that I found you. So thank you so much. If people want to get into your world and explore gin with you, where do they find you?
You can find me on Instagram as the Fairy Gin Mother, or it's thejoyofgin.substack.com is where I do all my writing. So there's writing and talking about gin, obviously drinking the stuff, and imagining that we're drinking gin. And I forgot to mention as well that the word gin is in Imagine, you know, John Lennon. And imagination, gin is hiding there right in the middle of that word, imagination. And so it's always been there. Ladies that you interviewed, she the laughter lady, she did this wonderful thing with the cocktails and the shakers, and just literally in our imaginations, it can bring us joy imagining that we're pouring all these things in together and just having wonderful cocktails together. So I need to connect with her actually, because I've got a feeling that there's a lot to explore here, and you're a laughter coach as well, wouldn't you?
I am, yes, yeah. It's great fun. I love it as well. I also love joy, and obviously fabulosity is all about that as well. So yeah, I think we've got quite a lot in common actually.
Yeah, I feel collaborations all over here. And I think what you're doing is amazing, connecting with people. I love the fact that you don't know these people when you just talk to them and so much comes out of the conversations. I think it's fantastic.
I tell you, it's my greatest.
Fabulous.
Yes, and the less that I know about them, the better. It's like my best is going to a movie as well, where I have absolutely no idea what they're about. And just, it's the same thing with meeting people I don't know. It's honestly, I'm just having the best time with this podcast, and I get to meet amazing people like you.
Thank you for the wonderful work you do.
Thank you.